Recorded live.
Good day, ladies and gentlemen. Pastor Eli James here, along with Pastor William Fink. And this is going to be a discussion of America in prophecy. And before we get started, I'd like to announce that we're going to have another 12-hour marathon on October 10th, 2010. We've been doing these. This will be the third year in a row. We started on 888, that is August 8, 2008, then we did September 9, 2009. This year we're going to be doing October 10, 2010. We're going to go all the way up to 12-12-12, and we'll see how long the world lasts between 12-12-12 and December 21st, 2012, right? And, of course, we've been doing this in anticipation that the prophetic times, the signs of the times are coming to pass, and that the end times are certainly here, folks. And the Gulf oil spill and the coming world economic collapse, all coming more rapidly than people would have anticipated. So, but this theme, the theme for 10-10-10 is going to be similar to what our theme tonight. It's going to be the Constitution of the United States and the Bible. The relationship between those two documents is going to be the theme for 10-10-10. And, of course, we'll also be doing some America in Prophecy on that date as well. So, good evening, William Fink. How are you doing tonight?
Hello. Praise Yahweh.
Yeah, praise Yahweh.
My first day on Talk Show in 2 weeks. I didn't miss it. I missed doing the programs.
Yeah.
I'm just not on Talk Show. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, you needed a break. Everybody needs a break every now and then, right? So, I hope you enjoyed your time with your family. And we're going to go into 2 Samuel 7:10 for starters. I'm going to be reading from verse 9 and 10. And it says this, "And I was with you wherever you went, and have cut off all your enemies out of your sight, and have made you a great name like to the name of the great men that are in the earth." He's talking to David here. But then he makes a, actually talking to Nathan about David, and he makes this prophecy right here in verse 10. "Moreover, I will appoint a place for my people Israel, and will plant them, that they may dwell in a place of their own, and move no more. Neither shall the children of wickedness afflict them any more as before time." Okay? Now, if this verse is about the Jews, who are the children of wickedness?
Well, right. And let me say, this prophecy has a second witness in 1 Chronicles 17:9, which is basically a repeat of it.
Okay.
All right, and neither shall the children of wickedness waste them anymore as at the beginning.
Right.
And if you want to, just because the children of Israel is supposed to be moved to an appointed place, and that's what this is saying.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, Samuel is stating this in Palestine, so Palestine can't be the place, right?
Right.
And
yes.
And where they go or where their final destination is, they will move no more.
That's right.
So they won't move back to Palestine.
Right, right.
So that's all a false theology. It's all a lie.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. This verse proves that it can't be Palestine where the regathering occurs. And interestingly, the 12 tribes of Israel, the two houses, we're going to be talking about those two houses coming back together again today also, because that's in the book of Ezekiel. And that's not happening in the Jewish state either, because, number one, the Jews don't believe that the other 12 tribes or the other 11 tribes are still in existence, right? They teach that they just disappeared or race mixed into oblivion, you know, and disappeared in the Middle East. We know otherwise. And the fact is that when we're talking about the regathering of the 12 tribes, we're talking about every single tribe and knowing at least approximately where those tribes dwell.
Well, right, and we know otherwise, and so do the prophets.
Yes, yes, and so we'll be getting into that. Now back into this verse 10, "And I will plant them that they may dwell in a place of their own and move no more." Okay, so throughout history, the 12 tribes of Israel have moved west, okay? Go ahead.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, well, so from Armenia up into, Scythia, okay, and then from the Crimea, taking the Danube River west toward Germany, and then the Anglo-Saxons moved west toward Britain, okay, and then Ireland, Iceland, Greenland, and finally America, constantly moving west. But now, there's no, if we go west, if we go any further west, we'll wind up going east, okay?
We'll wind up back where we started.
We'll end up back where we started.
Where we're not supposed to be.
Right, exactly. So this, America is the last border. The Pacific Ocean is the last border of the westward trek, okay? And I think that's what this verse is saying.
Now, let me say that, you know, just because Yahweh is going to appoint another place for Israel doesn't mean that they necessarily have to go peaceably.
Right.
You know, and a lot of them did. The Phoenicians, a lot of them did leave peaceably over the years up to the deportations.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, the Assyrian deportations were foreseen as
right.
early as Numbers chapter 24. And,
okay.
and I'd like to read a couple of verses from that.
Sure.
But when we read Numbers chapter 24, it's a very difficult chapter to understand. But Amalek, I'm looking at the Amalekites, right?
Yeah.
The Balak, and Balak is the king of Moab, and Balaam is prophesying on behalf of Balak against the children of Israel. And every time he tries to prophesy against them, good things come out of his mouth.
Right.
Because Yahweh won't allow it. So his prophecy being recorded in Numbers must be from Yahweh.
Mm-hmm.
And it says from verse 19, and we have to understand that Israel is the subject here. Israel is being addressed here.
Yes.
Out of Jacob shall come he that shall have dominion, and shall destroy many, and shall destroy him that remaineth of the city. And he's talking about Edom being a possession, and Seir also shall be a possession for his enemies, and Israel shall do valiantly, verse 18.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that portends the Roman destruction of Jerusalem. It's hard to tell, but I believe
yeah.
that's what it portends.
Okay,
and when he looked
yeah.
on Amalek, he took up this parable and said, Amalek was the first of the nations. Now, the Amalekites were Edomites, right?
Yes.
And they were the most powerful Canaanite nation, evidently, at this time.
Yeah.
But his later end shall be that he shall perish forever. And he looked on the Kenites and took up his parable and said, strong is thy dwelling place. Thou puttest thy nest in a rock. Now we see that of the Edomites later, and we see that same symbology in the later prophets.
Mm-hmm.
Nevertheless, the Kenites shall be wasted until Asher shall carry thee. Not the Kenite,
mm-hmm.
shall carry thee, meaning Israel,
mm-hmm.
the subject of the prophecy,
yes.
away captive.
Mm-hmm.
So that yes, is the first true. Prophecy that the children of Israel would be deported by the Assyrians.
Right, right. Okay. And, of course, the Jews don't tell anything about this story of the deportations of the ten.
Well, they're the Kenites that were
that's
wasted
right. that's
until
right.
Asher was took the Israelites away.
Right, and if they admit that the 12 tribes of Israel still exist in dispersion, and that dispersion beginning in 745 B.C., then their whole charade as being, you know, obviously in British Israel they believe the Jews are the tribe of Judah. We know that that's false, that they're still impersonators. But the claim that the 12 tribes of other 12 tribes cease to exist is absolutely false, and British Israel, you know, along with Christian identity, confirms that all 12 tribes are still in existence today.
Right. And the only Jew that I know that openly acknowledges the existence of the 10 tribes,
mm-hmm.
calls them,
yes.
carried away by the Assyrians,
yes.
which is also a lie, it is Yair Davidi.
Right.
And he only acknowledges it because he's made a very comfortable living from that.
Right. He sells books along those lines. Right. Yeah, he's. I don't know of any other Jew who actually admits that. Okay, he's probably the only one. Okay. All right, so my next subject is going to be Leviticus chapter 26, the seven times prophecy. And I'm just going to quote the various verses in Leviticus 26 that talk about the seven times. And it's talking about the, first of all, Yahweh has established his covenant with us, okay, and that if we obey his laws, then everything will be good for us. But if we fail to obey his laws, then he will punish us, okay? So that let me back up to verse 17 here. And if you fail to do these things, I will set my face against you, and you shall be slain before your enemies. They that hate you shall reign over you. Okay, who's reigning over us, folks? The international Jew is reigning over us. And you shall flee when none pursue you. And, you know, phony wars, right? Verse 18, And if you will not yet for all this hearken to me, then I will punish you seven times more for your sins. And in verse 21, and if you walk contrary to me and will not hearken to me, I will bring seven times more plagues upon you according to your sins. Verse 24, then will I also walk contrary to you and will punish you yet seven times for your sins. Down to verse 28. Then I will walk contrary to you also in fury, and I, even I, will chastise you seven times for your sins. So at least five times he says he's going to punish us for a period of seven times. And, of course, you know, we've discussed the 1,260 days being converted to years in the book of Daniel and the book of Revelation and various other prophecies. It's also 42 months. It's the same time period. And in those prophecies, it's been well established that 1,260 days is a prophecy, meaning 1,260 years.
Right. And let me say that seven times more is not a good translation.
Okay.
The Septuagint says, I will punish you seven. It says, I will punish you yet more,
mm-hmm.
even seven times.
Even seven times.
The word the word translated more in the King James basically means to add to,
mm-hmm.
you know, I will add seven times the punishment
yeah.
to your transgression, in other words.
Yes, yes. Okay. And so it's fairly evident that the mainstream churches and certainly the Jews have no idea what these verses are talking about. But it definitely is related to the Assyrian captivity and the casting the Israelites into the wilderness. Okay. So in 745 B.C., Tiglath-Pileser, the king of Assyria, began the first invasion against Israel in the reign of Menachem, and this is from 2 Kings 15, verses 19 and 20. In this year, the Assyrians captured and deported half the tribe of Manasseh, the half which lived on the eastern side of the Jordan River. This event began the process of deporting the 10 northern tribes away from Palestine, and let's see here. Who were then resettled in northern Media, just south of the Caucasus mountain range. From there, they eventually migrated through these mountains into Europe and became known as the Caucasian people. Putnam's Dictionary of Events, published in 1927 on page 6, states, 745 B.C., accession of Tiglath-Pileser III of Assyria, who wages war against Chaldea, Syria, and the Kingdom of Israel. Tiglath-Pileser is called Pul in the Bible, 2 Kings 15, 19, 1 Chronicles 5, 26. And then so when we start with this year, 745 B.C., and add 2,520 years to that date, we come up with 1776 A.D., the very year that the Declaration of Independence was signed, okay? And it's not related to the Jewish state. It's directly pointing to the foundation of America, okay? So you have any comments on that, Bill?
Well, no, that's fairly agreeable, and I think Adam Rutherford is the earliest writer I know that pointed that out.
Yeah, there's several British Israel authors, especially those engaged in pyramidology, that agree with this, you know, scenario. But I also wanted to reference spilled something on my keyboard here. Hold on. Revelation chapter 12, which directly correlates with this prophecy, because what we're talking about is when the woman clothed with the sun and who's cast out into the wilderness. And when we're talking about this woman who's cast out into the wilderness, let me just start with verse 1. Revelation chapter 12, and there appeared a great wonder in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun and the moon under her feet, and upon her head a crown of 12 stars. And she, of course, that being Israel, and she being with child, cried, travailing in birth and pain to be delivered. And there appeared another wonder in heaven. Behold, the great red dragon, having seven heads and 10 horns and 7 crowns upon his heads. Of course, we know that throughout history, the kingdoms that are ruled over by the dragon, by Satan, by Lucifer, whatever you want to call it, has always been at war with Israel. Verse 4, And his tail drew the third part of the stars of heaven, and did cast them to the earth, and the dragon stood before the woman, which was ready to be delivered, for to devour her child as soon as it was born. Okay? So that what we find is in the same very same year, 1776 A.D., the Illuminati was formed on May 1st, 1776, and these Illuminati, you know, the House of Rothschild, were trying to prevent, through the Bank of England, prevent the formation of the United States of America. Okay? So that's the fulfillment of verse 2, and she, being with child, cried, travailing in birth, and pain to be delivered, but the dragon, in verse 3, tries to prevent the child from being born. Now, this could be a reference back to the birth of Jesus Christ. However, these verses are stated, what, 90 A.D.? On the
well, right, and I believe it is a reference back to the birth of Jesus Christ, but I believe it also has a double meaning.
That's right. That's right. And verse 5, and she brought forth a man-child who was to rule all nations with a rod of iron, and her child was caught up to God and to his throne, and the woman fled into the wilderness, where she has a place prepared of God, that they should feed her there 1,260 days. And there was war in heaven, etc., etc. So, and the 1,260 days from the time, roughly the time of Christ. I know we've talked about this before. From my perspective, it was from the time of, who was the Roman emperor at that time, 1,260 years before 1798. Can't think of his name right now. But it was 526 A.D. When the monastic system was founded by the Roman Empire, which laid the foundation for feudalism and for the Roman Catholic Church. Okay,
it was the time of Justinian.
Justinian, exactly. Thank you. So, in my opinion, that therefore Revelation 12 correlates beautifully with Leviticus 26. Okay, now I want to turn to Isaiah chapter 18.
Well, let me say one more thing about Revelation chapter 12. I'd like to ask Ted Wheeland, who needs to hide their face from a snake? That's all.
Who needs to hide their face from a snake?
Well, the woman was, her face was hid from the face. She was hid from the face of the serpent.
Right. Okay.
In Revelation 12.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, certainly the Jews could not get at the Israelites during the European dispersion. Okay.
Well, absolutely.
They had to follow us, as they always do, as prophesied in Genesis 3:15. And the Israelites were simply out of their reach for the most part during the European dispersion, until very late in history when, the international bankers started to set up shop again. Yeah. Okay. All right. So now I'm going to be quoting here from a book entitled The Stone Kingdom, America, by E. Raymond Capt, and he's going to be discussing a lecture or an address presented to Congress in the year 1857 by the Reverend F. E. Pitts, P-I-T-T-S, of Nashville, Tennessee. Apparently, the Reverend Pitts was the first person, now possibly some British Israelites were aware of this too, but British Israel is more concerned about Britain being a fulfillment of prophecy rather than America, okay? So this is probably the first person to interpret Isaiah chapter 18 as being about America, okay? He says here on page 1, Reverend Pitts was referring to chapter 18 of the book of Isaiah, meaning pointing to America. This passage is found in that part of Isaiah where the burdens of the various nations are given, and we discuss these burdens at length in the various different nations that are being talked about there. Chapter 13, the burden of Babylon. Chapter 15, the burden of Moab. Chapter 17, the burden of Damascus. Chapter 19, the burden of Egypt. 22, the burden of the Valley of the Vision. And chapter 23, the burden of Tyre. However, chapter 18, the nation is not named, okay? So he says, now just going right to the verses. Verse 1 is translated in our King James Version as saying, woe to the land shadowing with wings, which is beyond the rivers of Ethiopia, okay? So, and I know, Bill, you have, I think, Bertrand Comparé's analysis of Isaiah.
Well, yes, I have a rough sketch of it in my head that I'll comment
okay,
on.
Yeah, okay, so why don't you comment on Bertrand Comparé's version as I go through this. Now, here is what E. Raymond Capp has to say about this verse. The Hebrew word hoy eretz, with which the chapter opens, is a mistranslation. It is not an explanation of woe, but a hailing for attention, as in all hail. It is the same word used in the same sense in the 55th chapter of Isaiah, where it says, ho, everyone that thirsteth. In the first verse of Isaiah 18, we find two phrases which identify the land in question. Since the chapter is not addressed to any land or nation by name, and since the other chapters concerning Israel are specifically addressed, we can conclude that the land in question was unknown in Isaiah's time. So far, so good, Bill?
Well, no, not so far, so good.
Okay, so what do you have to say?
That word is not a mistranslation.
Okay.
It's an alternate translation. Katz is offering an alternate translation. There are thousands of times. There are many times in Scripture where that word is translated.
Whoa. Okay. He continues to say, this land was beyond the rivers of Ethiopia. And again, he's following the lecture of Reverend Pitts. The rivers referred to would be the White and Blue Nile, their tributaries. The word beyond in Hebrew means west. When we look at a map today, the top part is north, the bottom south, the right is east, the left west. But this was not so in biblical times.
Well, that's an error because the word beyond there is Eber. It means across. It doesn't have any directional inclination at all.
Okay.
It has no directional meaning at all.
Okay.
It means across.
All right. So let me continue here with what he has to say. He's apparently using this as a idiom, okay, meaning behind you. And he says the Hebrews facing the sunrise were looking toward the east. Before meant east, behind or beyond meant west. The right arm pointed south and the left arm pointed north. Okay, therefore, beyond the rivers of Ethiopia, according to him, means straight west from Jerusalem. And then he says, follow that line of latitude from the city west, and you will see no great country until you strike the coast of South Carolina and Georgia in America. Okay, so that's how he interprets verse 1. Okay, what did Bertrand Comparé have to say about this?
Well, Bertrand Comparé tried to, he basically follows Capp here. I don't know if he got his interpretation from Capp.
Okay.
But he has the same interpretation of the word woe.
Okay.
And he didn't go in detail in the paper I have, which is available on Clifton's website.
Okay.
It's under the Comparé section. It's America in Bible Prophecy.
All right.
Or America is a Bible Land
or something like that. Okay.
And he gives the same interpretation of this word Ethiopia.
Okay.
America is a Bible Land is the paper.
Okay. Very good.
So it seemed, and a fellow which Clifton put some notes in there from a fellow which Howard Rand had published an article on the same topic, and he would agree with Comparé and Capp on this, I believe.
Okay, yeah. So there's a consensus, but that doesn't mean it's necessarily.
Well, yeah, because I'll insist that it's wrong.
Okay.
Because America isn't beyond the White and Blue Nile from Palestine to
Yeah, well, they're actually to the southwest.
Yeah, you can't draw a line.
Okay.
And Ethiopia in Ethiopia, the land south of Egypt, was always seen as a south land and never seen as a
mm-hmm.
west land
in
the oikoumene of the Hebrews and the Greeks.
Okay,
now,
so
there's another Ethiopia.
Right.
Which is Mesopotamia. When Moses goes to Ethiopia for a wife, the scripture reveals that Jethro simply lived in Arabia.
Mm-hmm.
And that was called the land of Cush. And this Ethiopia is called the land of Cush.
Right.
And the first time Ethiopia is mentioned is in Genesis chapter 1, the four rivers proceeding from Egypt, and none of them could possibly be, the four rivers coming that divide Eden,
right.
Surround Eden, and none of them could possibly Yeah, you know, one of them is called the River of Ethiopia, and it can't possibly be the Ethiopia south of Egypt. The first, the Greeks in Isaiah's time were writing about the Ethiopia of the east.
Okay.
And there was an Ethiopia below Egypt. But both of them were Cush in Hebrew.
Right.
And we see that because Moses went to the Cush of the east to get his wife, not to the Cush of the south.
Mm-hmm.
The Cush of the east, or the Ethiopia of the east, was the first Babylonian empire.
Mm-hmm.
And it stretched from Arabia all the way to the Indus River.
Mm-hmm.
It was a great empire.
It was an Indo-Aryan empire, right?
Well absolutely. And that's the empire of Nimrod, who was from what tribe?
Yeah.
From the tribe of Cush.
Mm-hmm.
Nimrod was a descendant of Cush. So his empire that he founded was called Cush by the Hebrews and Ethiopia by the Greeks.
Yeah.
Now, those people established a colony by sea.
Mm-hmm.
On the Horn of Africa.
Right, right.
Okay?
Okay?
Which was called Ethiopia by the Greeks and Cush by the Hebrews.
Mm-hmm. So Cap's interpretation here all hinges upon his assumption that we're talking about priests facing east and that the beyond means behind you, okay, which would be straight west. Okay.
Well, right. Beyond the rivers of Ethiopia, that could describe Persia. It could describe Assyria.
Right.
It could describe, and in a way, it could describe Babylonia, even though that was really between the rivers of Ethiopia.
Right.
And basically, if we look after the deportations of the Israelites to the land beyond the rivers of Ethiopia, directly beyond, not stretching it, you know, across the Atlantic.
Right.
Directly beyond the rivers of the Ethiopia of the east,
yes,
we see the dispersed of Israel.
Right.
And we see it in the, as far as the Jakarta's River Valley and the Oxus River Valleys, which is a land divided by rivers, as Isaiah 18 says at the end, we see that the greatest mass of Israelites were the Saka and the Massagete, who dwelt in that region for maybe 700-800 years.
Well, it would be today northern Iran.
Well, it would be actually it would be Kazakhstan and that area.
Well, even north of there.
Yeah, it would be in that area, southern Russia.
Okay. So Cap's interpretation hinges on this beyond, meaning directly behind you, as the priests face east in from Jerusalem.
Well, that's reading a whole lot of conjecture into.
Oh yeah.
Because we can see where Eber is used in scripture and in history, it can be many different directions.
Yes.
Eber just means across.
Yes, right. And then he talks about to the land shattering with wings. And again, if you look at both North and South America today, it loosely resembles the expanded wings of a great eagle. Therefore, it foretold the spread eagle, the symbol of Americanism. While other countries have the eagle as their national emblem, no other country has the eagle with outstretched wings. Okay.
Well, right. And the biggest mistake that Capt and Comparé both make, and the person that Rand published, I forget his name, I'm sorry, the three of them made the same mistake. They equate the people of the land shadowing with wings as being the same as the people who were scattered and peeled in the King James in verse 2. That's a huge mistake because the text in both the Septuagint and the King James clearly states that the land shadowing with wings sends ambassadors by the sea to the nation scattered and peeled.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well,
there are two different entities here.
Well, let me read verse 2 and give Cap's interpretation here. That sendeth ambassadors by the sea, even in vessels of bulrushes upon the waters, saying, go ye, swift messengers, to a nation scattered and peeled, to a people terrible from their beginning hitherto, a nation meted out and trodden down, whose land the rivers have spoiled. Okay? So let me give Cap's interpretation here, and you just touched upon one of the verses here, and he says, ambassadors by sea in vessels of bulrushes upon the water. First, the ambassadors are sent by sea. The word ambassadors means men who travel on business for the government, not those who travel for pleasure or profit. Fine, so far so good. For over 150 years, all America's ambassadors traveling on government business went by water to Europe, Asia, Australia, South America, and Central America. Only in two countries, Canada and Mexico, did our representatives not have to travel by sea to arrive at their assignments, okay? Second, when the translators of the King James Version of 1611 came to the Hebrew compound word water-drinking vessels, they had no idea what it meant. They therefore looked around for something that grew out of the water and guessed bulrushes, cattails, or papyrus, hence the words vessels of bulrushes. Now, his interpretation is, however, vessels that drink is a perfect description of our modern-day steamship. In other words, you know, water-drinking vessels would be the sea-going vessels of America. Okay.
Well, the Hebrew says vessels of reeds or papyrus.
Okay.
And that's how the Egyptians made their vessels.
Right.
They made them out of bound papyrus.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Kat's interpretation here is... It is it's a fabrication. It's a fabrication.
Okay.
There's no way you could take a papyrus and imagine that to be a vessel that drinks water.
Okay,
that's
so
crazy.
It's reed. He says vessel. So you're saying water drinking reed is what the Hebrew says. He's saying it says water drinking vessels, which would be the boats, you know, that that were made of the papyrus.
Well, the word for vessel, it's you know, every language has a very general term,
right,
for anything constructed, mm-hmm, that's a receptacle. Our general term is vessel, and it's a vessel could be a cup, a vessel could be a steamship,
right.
And the Greeks had the same equivalent would be skuas. A skuas could be a pan, a bowl, a cup, or a boat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, it's a vessel.
Right.
And Hebrew has the same type of word. It's keli. It might be the word the keel comes from.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay. And it's an article, a vessel, an implement, an apparatus, a piece of equipment. It could be a utensil or it could be a boat. You know?
Right.
It's a general word for vessel, which is, you know, it's vessel is the best translation for it.
Yeah. Okay.
But a vessel of papyrus, it is commonly known at that time,
mm-hmm,
and it's always a boat.
Right. Right. Okay. So again, there is a liberality of interpretation here by Cap. Continuing here, go ye swift messengers to a nation scattered and tall, well, scattered and peeled, to a people terrible from their beginning. And he says that the word scattered is from the Hebrew word mashak, meaning drawn out or tall. The word peeled is from the Hebrew marat, meaning to pluck off hair or smooth-shaven, okay? So I think Bertrand Comparé has the same description, that this really should be translated not scattered and peeled, but tall and clean-shaven.
Well, yes, he does. That's exactly how he does it. And if you pay attention to the Cap's interpretation of these verses and to the Comparé explanation of these verses, you'll see that they took for granted that the people of the land shadowing with wings that send ambassadors by the sea,
mm-hmm,
are the same people as the people scattered and peeled.
Oh, okay.
And that's not true, because the land shadowing with wings that sends ambassadors by sea is sending those ambassadors here to
the nation
scattered and peeled.
Okay.
So we have two different people in Isaiah's
prophecy.
Right,
they're missing whom the ambassadors are sent. Right.
Right, because Comparé tells a nice story about America, about how we sent ambassadors by sea.
Right.
Just like Cap just did.
Yes.
But, you know, if the nation scattered and peeled is us,
uh-huh,
then the nation that sends the ambassadors can't be.
Yes, yes.
And that, to me, is very sloppy scholarship.
Right.
And it shows that they read this chapter in a very careless manner.
Yeah.
Because they want...
They
find
want
America
to be prophesied here.
But this chapter, it just isn't it. I'm sorry,
okay.
It ain't it. There is America in prophecy.
Oh, yeah.
But not in this chapter.
We'll definitely get to all of that. Right. So in other words, scattered and peeled, drawn or smooth-shaven, however it is to be interpreted, that
to me, the nation scattered and peeled is Israel.
Sure.
There's little doubt.
Okay. No doubt.
Now, the land shadowing with wings, I believe, is Assyria. Okay? And I can't explain the shadowing with wings, except that, you know, wings are a prominent item in Assyrian iconography.
Oh, yeah.
There's no doubt. The winged bulls, which are sphinxes, right, which are cherubs.
So the sun with wings.
And the sun disk with wings are the two primary items in Assyrian iconography.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
If anybody was at TeamSpeak before yesterday, I had a banner up there that that demonstrated that on the TeamSpeak server, and I'll put that back up there tonight.
Yeah, okay.
So that you could see it's an Assyrian inscription, and it shows the winged sun disk, and that's a very prominent item, and I'm not saying that's the interpretation of this, but it seems to me to make sense.
Right.
Now, the Assyrians were the leaders of the Oikoumene, the leading nation of the Oikoumene at this time, and they would have sent all their ambassadors by sea. And in fact, they did. They sent their ambassadors up and down the Euphrates River, and up and down the Tigris River, and across the Mediterranean to the Greeks and to the Egyptians. And up and down the Nile, and all, you know, it was the rivers
and the Indian
of old.
Ocean. The
rivers,
as well.
Yeah. The rivers are the highways of the ancient world.
Right.
Look at America and the founding of America. Every major city was founded on a river until the Jews founded Las Vegas.
Okay. Yes. So, from your analysis here, we're still talking about Israel, but we're still talking about the early stages.
This is talking about Israel, no doubt.
Mm-hmm.
The nation scattered and peeled. Scattered is Strong's number 4900. It's Meshach, to draw, drag, or seize.
Mm-hmm.
That's Israel. They were the people seized
and
dragged away by the Assyrians.
Away from Palestine,
Peeled is Strong's number 4178, Morat, and that means scoured, polished, or smooth. And that describes Israel.
Right.
They were scoured, all right, of all their possessions, as Paul tells us in the book of Hebrews.
Right.
They were left destitute and dumped in a foreign land.
That's right. And also, I think by cleaned, you can say cleansed, because when they left Palestine, they left not all of their rituals behind. They maintained a lot of their pagan rituals.
They left the Canaanites behind.
They left the Canaanites behind, exactly. Right. So they were purged of the Canaanites in their midst and were sent off into the wilderness. Okay, very good. All right, now one more phrase from this verse, too. Whose land the rivers have spoiled.
I read that as the rivers of people.
Rivers of people. Okay.
Yeah, the Assyrians poured into Israel and took all the Israelites away. The Babylonians poured into Jerusalem and took all the people away.
Yes.
The Edomites and all of their other foreign enemies were allied with the Assyrians and with the Babylonians.
Right.
Rivers of people poured into Israel and took the Israelites away.
Right. Okay, very good. Cap takes this literally, meaning the rivers of America, such as the Columbia River in the west, the Mississippi River dividing the country roughly in half, and I guess what would be the river?
Well, you know, this does say this word spoiled does mean divided.
Divided,
or cleaved. And capped can be right about that, okay, because that is the literal meaning of the word.
Yeah.
But if your house is raided and pillaged by three robbers, they will divide your house amongst
them. That's right.
That's how I read it. And that's how the King James read it. I haven't checked the Greek here, but I can.
While you're looking,
and that says trodden down, actually.
Trodden down.
The Greek says trodden down.
Okay.
And that seems to be the katapatamenon. That means to walk upon and tread down.
Right. Okay. Verse 3, all ye inhabitants of the world and dwellers on the earth, see ye when he lifteth up an ensign on the mountains, and when he bloweth a trumpet, hear ye. And of course, he's talking about America being the mountain of Israel in the latter days. Okay.
So, well, that's nice. But wherever Israel went, they were the mountain.
That's right.
But here, that he lifted an ensign on the mountains, and let me say that about 100 years, 100 and About 100 years from the first deportations of the Israelites, the Scythians ruled all of Mesopotamia.
Mm-hmm.
And they were the dispersed Israelites.
Yes. Yes. Okay. The Sakkei. Right. Verse 4, for so the Lord said unto me, I will take my rest, and I will consider in my dwelling place like a clear heat upon herbs, and like a cloud of dew in the heat of the harvest. So let me read the next two verses. For afore the harvest, when the bud is perfect and the sour grape is ripening in the flower, he shall both cut off the sprigs with pruning hooks and take away and cut down the branches. They shall be left together unto the fowls of the mountains and to the beasts of the earth, and the fowl shall summer upon them, and all the beasts of the earth shall winter upon them. Again, this sounds like ancient Israel, okay, as you've been describing. His interpretation is this. These words of verses 4 through 6 are highly figurative, being couched in Eastern terms that it is difficult for the Western mind to understand their meaning, which he says in verse 5.
Well, they appear all throughout the Bible.
Yes, they do. Yes.
Statements such as this.
Yes. In verse 5, the branches of ill omen or sprigs will spring up, indicating a time of cleansing for the nation. Those worthless evil branches are to be pulled off, exposed, and left for the predatory external forces, here called fowls and beasts. But of course,
well, that's true of that time. I mean, there were a lot of Israelites joined the Canaanites of that time. Yahweh said that he would sift, and we'll see that in one of these later prophecies, he will sift the children of Israel like a sieve among the nations.
Yes.
And that's exact. We were deported to all those nations,
and
a lot of mixed seed went in, but according to the prophecy, only good seed came out.
Yeah. Now, actually, here in America, it's kind of like the opposite, because this is, of course, the mountain of Israel, but all the other races have been.
well, right, exactly. And that's a whole
here.
Separate set of prophecies.
Right.
That's a whole separate,
right.
Separate issue.
Yes. Okay, verse 7. In that time shall the present be brought unto Yahweh of hosts of a people scattered and peeled, or scattered and peeled again, and from a people terrible from the beginning, a nation meted out and trodden underfoot, whose land the rivers have spoiled, to the place of the name of Yahweh of hosts, the Mount Zion. Okay, so it sounds like it's a repetition of the first couple of verses here.
Right, and let me talk about that meted out and trodden underfoot.
Okay.
Because a lot of people are going to read this America is a Bible land, or this paper that Comparé wrote, and they might be convinced about that. Yeah, you know, and in reference to this verse, Comparé tried to show that this described America because of our Meats and Bounds Act.
Yes.
And to me, that's absurd, because in truth, it's the nation meted out and trodden underfoot.
Right, not the land.
And that's the word goy. And we can never, never make the mistake of confusing. And this is the most common mistake we've ever made, and it gets us in trouble every time, when we confuse a geographical area for the nation, which Comparé does here.
Uh-huh, right.
And that's something horrible. The nation is always the people.
The people.
The word is
people,
goy. It's the Hebrew word for nation or a people.
Yeah.
And we can't relate that to the land geographically.
Right.
And Comparé made a huge mistake there.
Yes. He relates verse 7 to Isaiah chapter 11, where he quotes, and it shall come to pass in that day that Yahweh shall set his hand again the second time to recover the remnant of his people, which shall be left from Assyria and from Egypt and from Pathros, Cush, Elam, Shinar, Hamath, and from the islands of the sea, which is very interesting. And he shall set up an ensign for the nations, and shall assemble the outcasts of Israel, and gather together the dispersed of Judah from the four corners of the earth. Now this sounds like America. Isaiah 11, verses 11 and 12.
It's basically, you know, it uses all of the nations of that time.
Yes,
To describe what's going to happen in a far future time.
Right, exactly.
And it uses those nations allegorically.
Yes. Now, but it's very interesting that it is from these nations and places that the Israelites originate from. Okay, so there were Israelites in Assyria, in Egypt, Pathros, Cush, Elam, Shinar, Hamath, and also the dispersed of Judah, okay?
Well, right. We have the Israelites that fled the Assyrians to Egypt that we were told not to.
Right.
Right. And there were actually Greek Israelites in Egypt that few people know about, right?
Right, right.
In Cyrene. And they were Israelites who left 500 years before this all happened and eventually settled in Egypt and along the shores of the Mediterranean and in Africa between Egypt and Carthage. Now the Elam is Persia. What we see, and after the Assyrian and Babylonian deportations, we do see Israelites in all those places.
That's right.
But they don't stay there.
Right, they don't. Yeah. They leave to be reassembled somewhere else, okay? We've already quoted 2 Samuel 7:10, proving that it's not going to be Palestine. And this prophecy here in Isaiah 11, which is followed in verse 16, talking about the highway from Assyria through the Caucasus Mountains, right? So we know that the regathering of the people named here has to be the entire dispersion of all 12 tribes.
Well, right, and that happened in Europe probably, well, by the time the Stone Kingdom was assembled.
Right, right.
The first Stone Kingdom.
Right, and that Stone Kingdom being first announced in the book of Daniel, where that's the kingdom that smashes the four-part beast of the book of Daniel, you know, which would be all four of those kingdoms, Babylon, the Medes and Persians, the Greeks, and the Roman Empire.
Right. And instead of first Stone Kingdom, I should have said the beginning of the Stone Kingdom.
Yes.
That's the assembly of the German tribes that the, I believe, when the Israelite tribes finally all made it into Europe, which really didn't happen until the Saka and the Goths, And the Massagetae all crossed into Europe in the 3rd and 4th centuries A.D. And 5th century A.D. And they are the people that destroyed all of those prior kingdoms and broke them in pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And that can only be the Germanic tribes.
Yeah. So the interpretation, well, first of all, the Jews didn't disperse until 70 A.D., okay? And then ultimately not until, I think it was 135 A.D.
Well, right, and Luke and Jeremiah together prove beyond all doubt that that's the dispersion of the enemies of God.
Mm-hmm.
That's the dispersion of the bad figs.
Right.
That's by no means the dispersion of Israel.
Yes. Okay. All right, so let's see, I have Psalm 89 here underlined. And so I guess to sum up Isaiah chapter 18, it's a very problematic interpretation by both Comparé and Capt, but nevertheless, it does refer to all 12 tribes being regathered, you know, at some future time. There's simply no doubt about that.
And beyond the rivers of Ethiopia, you know, if once we understand that's the Ethiopia of the East, that helps prove, again, because we've seen this several times in Isaiah, And it's been pointed out when we did the Isaiah series last month, that it again proves the identity story, because the only people we find at this time beyond the rivers of the Ethiopia of the East are the Saka and the Massagetae in southern, what we know today is southern Russia.
Yes. Okay, I have Psalm 89:29. 28, 29, 34 through 37. Let's read these real quick. My mercy will I keep for him forevermore, and my covenant shall stand fast with him. Again, we're talking about the descendants of David being the house of Judah. His seed also will I make to endure forever, and his throne as the days of heaven. And again, we're advised not to forsake his law. Verse 34 through 37. My covenant will I not break, nor alter the thing that has gone out of my lips. Once I have sworn by my holiness that I will not lie to David, his seed shall endure forever, and his throne as the sun before me. It shall be established forever as the moon, as a faithful witness in heaven, Shelah. So definitely the house of David has existed throughout history, and it wandered through Europe. Okay. These prophecies cannot be ignored. They cannot be ignored. The Jews have never fulfilled any of these kingdom prophecies at all. They have never had a dynasty of kings descended from David ever. But we true Israelites have, and they became the kings and queens of Europe. Okay? All right. And then Hosea chapter 1, verses 6 through 21. and it should be right after the book of Daniel, that we will find these verses here. Just about there, folks.
I think Hosea 1 only has about 11 verses.
Oh, okay. Did I say that? Okay. I'm probably going into the next.
Verse 6 to Hosea 2:1, probably.
Right. Okay. 1:6, here we go. And she can. Talking about the Valley of Jezreel. And she conceived again. This is the Lo-Ami, not my people, who will again be his people. And she conceived again and bore a daughter, and God said to him, call her name Loruhamah, for I will no more have mercy upon the house of Israel, but I will utterly take them away, but I will have mercy upon the house of Judah, and will save them by Yahweh their Elohim, and will not save them by bow, nor by sword, nor by battle, nor horses or horsemen. Now when she had weaned Loruhamah, she conceived and bore a son that said, God, call his name Lo-Ami, for you are not my people, and I will not be your God. So, of course, this was a temporary situation. This was not a total divorcement.
Well, of course, and we'll see this in the next verses.
Yes. Verse 10, yet the number of the children of Israel shall be as the sand of the sea, which cannot be measured nor numbered, and it shall come to pass that in the place where it was said to them, you are not my people, there it shall be said to them, you are the sons of the living God. Okay, now, to me, this is a direct prophecy of what's happening in America today in the Christian identity movement, because throughout Christendom, all of the Israelites, all of the real Israelites believe that the Jews are God's chosen people, okay? And so our people, true Israel, have been falsely believing that we are not his people, but here in America is being said we are the sons of the living God. Okay? So what's your take on this verse?
Well, this is absolutely true. I mean, the people that are claiming to be the children of God are frauds, and this verse proves it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That they've never, ever admitted not being the children of God.
That's right.
They've never been called in history not the Israelites of the Bible.
Right.
That they've had us fooled right from the beginning.
Yes.
And they've kept that, they've managed to keep that charade up for 1,800 years. Now, Christians always thought that the not knowing their Bibles very well,
right,
they always thought that they were a cursed people,
mm-hmm,
until recently.
Yeah.
Until recently, Christians always believed the Jews were a cursed people.
Right.
But they still thought that they were cursed Israelites.
Right. Exactly. So, and then there's also the prophecy that the Israelites would forget their identity and it would recover in the last days. And, of course, so Christian identity is fulfilling that as well. So this is only America. It could possibly be the place where this truth is being stated. Okay? It's not being stated anywhere else because the British Israelites still want to believe that the Jews are the tribe of Judah. And they're not. They're absolutely not. In verse 11.
British Israel is not Christian Israel identity. Right?
Yeah, they fail.
And neither is Ted Wieland.
Right, that's right. Verse 11, then shall the children of Judah and the children of Israel, okay, both houses, folks, be gathered together and appoint themselves one head. When did this happen?
And these are the children of Judah that were going to be saved back in verse 7, right?
Right.
So we see the troublemakers, the clown.
They will appoint themselves one head. Could that be George Washington?
Well, yeah. It's their governor shall come out from the midst of them. They will choose a governor from among them.
Mm-hmm.
It's in a different prophecy. And that's, you know, that's why I believe that the 2,520 years of punishment.
Yes.
When that ended, that doesn't mean that the end time comes. We're in the last time.
Yes.
But we're told that we would be free from punishment after this 2,520 years, and that is when we entered into this period of self-rule.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
After the 2,520 years were over for each tribe,
yes,
every nation in Europe ended up in a parliamentary democracy.
Right.
Now, I'm not saying it's for the better.
Right.
Okay.
Because that's what's going to happen.
Because we cannot rule ourselves. and the children of Esau slipped right in there and perverted all of those parliamentary democracies.
Right. Right.
Okay. And that's part of our lesson.
Yes. Not to allow the Jews to enter our countries, right?
So we became free from tyrants,
mm-hmm.
and we became our own worst tyrant.
Right.
By thinking that we could choose our own leader.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, that is what this is pointing to.
But this is actually what you're saying is actually a fulfillment of, I forget the prophet's name that told who anointed Saul. You know, when Yahweh said, my people don't want to be ruled by me, they want a king, right?
Right.
And so, well, I'm going to give them kings, but these kings are not going to be nice to you, of Israelites. They're going to be tyrants. They're going to tax you heavily. They're going to make you go to war, blah, 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 right? And so, this is a fulfillment, a continuous fulfillment of that prophecy. We want kings. We want earthly kings. Well, he's going to give us earthly kings. Until we learn that he is our king, right?
Well, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And we were free. We were freed from tyrants in 1776,
right.
from Manasseh and at various other times for the other tribes.
Yes.
I believe that.
Yes.
And as soon as we were freed from tyrants, we became our own worst tyrant because we vote for our stomachs. We vote for ourselves.
Right, right. Yeah, and certainly... Well, yeah, you know, I have to qualify that. I mean, if the Jews and the Edomites and the Canaanites and all of the races they exploit to you know war against us, if the Jews weren't in our midst, you know, things certainly would not be as bad as they are now. Benjamin Franklin said to the lady after they signed the Declaration, the Constitution. She asked him, "Well, what have you given us, Mr. Franklin?" And he said, a constitution, if you can keep it, okay? We have not been able to keep it. We just haven't been able to keep it, okay? And so let me finish verse 11. Then shall the children of Judah and the children of Israel be gathered together and appoint themselves one head, and they shall come up out of the land, for great shall be the day of Jezreel. Now, Jezreel would be an end times prophecy, right?
Oh yes, Jezreel is definitely pointing to the day of vengeance of God.
Right. So all 12 tribes will be gathered together in one nation just before the judgment day, folks. That's what this prophecy entails, okay? That's not true of the bandit state, the vampire state in Palestine. It's just not true of those people. Now to doubly amplify the fact that Jewish state in Palestine cannot possibly be the true Israel, the true regathering of the 12 tribes. Let's go into Ezekiel, the book of Ezekiel, and let me turn to chapter 37 here, just about there, where we're talking about the various future prophecies about, again, the two houses. The house of Israel, and the house of Judah, okay? First of all, the two sticks prophecy, and this begins, I'll start at verse 15. The word of Yahweh came again to me, saying, "Moreover, you son of man, take you one stick and write upon it for Judah and for the children of Israel, his companions. Then take another stick and write upon it for Joseph, the stick of Ephraim, and for all the house of Israel, his companions." Okay? So Judah is one of the houses, and Ephraim is one of the other houses. Ephraim representing the 10 tribes, and Judah representing, of course, the 2 tribes. Verse 17, "And join them one to another into one stick, and they shall become one in your hand." Okay? So the division of the 2 houses will no longer be in existence. The 2 houses will come together in the form of one stick. Verse 18, "And when the children of your people shall speak to you, saying, 'Will you not show us what you mean by these?' Say to them, 'Thus says Yahweh, behold, I will take the stick of Joseph, which is in the hand of Ephraim, and the tribes of Israel, his fellows, and will put them with him, even with the stick of Judah, and make them one stick, and they shall be one in my hand.'" Can there be any doubt that all 12 tribes will come together at some future time. You there, Bill?
Well, yes, I am.
It's not a rhetorical question.
No,
actually,
there
shouldn't
be any doubt at all.
There can be no doubt.
And several passages in the Revelation and tone the same thing.
Yeah.
And in the other, and in fact, I think it's Zechariah 12:7, and Yahweh says, "I will save the tents of Judah first."
Uh-huh.
Before Israel.
Right.
I will save the tents of Judah first.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. And, of course, going back into Genesis chapter 10, I believe it's 10 where it says the Japheth shall dwell in the tents of Shem. The Davidic rulers of the house of Shem became the kings and queens of the Slavic Japhethites. There's simply no doubt that the house of Judah was the ruling tribe over all of Israel in Europe. There's simply no doubt about it. Okay? Verse 21, and say to them, thus says Yahweh Elohim, behold, I will take the children of Israel from among the heathen where they be gone, and will gather them on every side and bring them into their own land. Okay, we're talking about America here, folks. And I will make them one nation in the land upon the mountains of Israel, and the mountains of Israel being the people of Israel, and one king shall be king to them all. Of course, that's going to be Yahshua Messiah. And there shall be no more two nations, neither shall they be divided into two kingdoms any more at all. Neither shall they defile themselves any more with their idols, nor with their detestable things. Of course, we're doing that right now, big time, folks. So this total reconciliation between the Israelites and Yahweh does not actually happen until the judgment day. Continuing, nor with any of their transgressions, but I will save them out of all their dwelling places, wherein they have sinned, and will cleanse them, so shall they be my people, and I will be their God. There's no universalism here at all, is there, Bill?
Well, no, and this is a very good, and I believe that this Ezekiel 37 prophecy definitely points to this nation.
Yes.
We have, I'm going to wind back a little bit. I believe that a lot of, not all these nations are Zara Judah, but there's a lot of Zara Judah in Ireland and Scotland.
Yes.
And there's a lot of Pharez Judah in Germany.
Yes.
But I also think that there's a lot of Manasseh in Germany also.
Okay.
That's my opinion.
Yes.
None of this can be proven except that it can be demonstrated that certain tribes are in certain places.
Mm-hmm.
And but we can't prove that any one nation is an entire
right.
tribe. That's just silly.
Right.
And that any one tribe is in one European nation,
right?
And that's, I believe, that's conjectural when we attempt
right.
to go there.
Well, we can say that a certain tribe is best represented in a certain nation, but we can't equate a tribe with a modern European nation. We can't.
Well, right. And let me give an example.
Okay.
Well, we know the Angles went to England.
Right.
Right. And we believe they're Ephraim, and they went to England, and they mixed with Britons
mm-hmm.
that were the Trojans had settled in and around
yeah,
London
Britain.
and they were Judah.
They were there, Judah. Yes.
And the Phoenicians had settled all of Cornwall and much of southern Britain. And the, according to Bede, the Angles didn't push them all out.
Mm-hmm.
What they did was they established villages right among them.
Right.
Yeah, you
and
know, right in the next
German.
Valley, in the next valley, or across
right.
the river, or down the stream a
exactly.
little.
Exactly.
Yeah, you know, and we can't imagine that the Angles wholly replaced the Britons.
Right.
That's
no,
contrary to British history that's recorded. That,
right.
Now,
right.
That they were the Phoenicians that settled in Cornwall and southern Britain and were mining tin there.
Mm-hmm.
And Dan was there also.
Yeah.
And the Phoenicians are Asher and Gad
yes.
and Naphtali and Zebulun.
Right.
And they had lived there for 1,000 years before Ephraim
right.
ever got there, before the Angles got there.
Right. So,
now when the Angles crossed into Britain, well, a lot of them stayed behind in Germany.
Yes.
The British Israel people tried to deny it. But it's historically proven, and we have place names to prove it.
Mm-hmm.
We have Engelkirchen.
Right.
We have Engelstadt.
And
several other place names prove an Angle presence in Germany
right.
when those towns and cities were established.
And the same with the Saxons. You know, because Wessex, Essex, and Sussex are all settlements of the Saxons.
Well, right, but that can't be imagined to be all the Saxons,
right?
As the arrogant British Israel bastards like to do.
Right. Yeah, they like to claim that the Germans are in fact Assyrians, of the 10 nations of Genesis 10, right?
Well, right, and they just pull that out of their hat,
right?
Because they follow a Jew named Edward Hein.
Yeah. Who first came up with that idea, right.
Who's a major propagandist for the House of Rothschild.
Right, exactly. So, apparently there's a clown in the chat room. I haven't been watching it, so I'm not sure who.
Well, they're talking about Troublemaker.
Oh, Troublemaker, okay.
I sent him off, when I made that comment.
Right. Okay, yeah, he doesn't believe that Jerusalem is in the land of Judah, and he believes that there's a real Judah is north, and of course, there's nothing in Scripture or history that can even remotely suggest that. Okay, where did I leave off? Okay, I forgot now.
Yeah, you're at verse 23, I think.
23, okay, I just finished 23, verse 24, and David my servant shall be king over them, and of course, David is the house of Judah, troublemaker. And they shall all have one shepherd, and they shall also walk in my judgments and observe my statutes and do them. And they shall dwell in the land that I have given to Jacob, my servant, wherein your fathers have dwelled. And now here this seems to be, okay, is this past or future here in verse 25, or does it apply to both past and future? And they shall dwell therein, even they and their children and their children's children forever. My servant David shall be their prince forever. Okay. For moreover, I will make a covenant of peace with them. It shall be an everlasting covenant with them. So all 12 tribes here, folks, an everlasting covenant with all 12 tribes. No one can say that only the tribe of Judah is left. And of course, they're not the Jews anyway. And I will place them and multiply them and will set my sanctuary in the midst of them forevermore. Okay, let me just finish here. My tabernacle also shall be with them. Yea, I will be their God, and they shall be my people. Very exclusive language again. And the heathen shall know that I am Yahweh, and I do sanctify Israel, when my sanctuary shall be in the midst of them forevermore. Again, this has got to be end times talk, when the Israelites have finally accepted Yahweh, Yahshua, with their entire heart. Okay? And going back to verse 25, Joshua states, "Or wherever the Israelites set their feet, that is our land."
Right, and I believe this is talking about the past from the day that this happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
But our fathers dwelt here. Well,
yes.
We're going to receive this land where our fathers dwelt, right? We're going to receive all the land where our fathers dwelt.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Yeah, and ultimately, the entire planet is going to be ours. As if we get to Revelation chapter 21 and 22, we will, cover that as well. But now, in chapter 38, talking about Gog and Magog. Now, of course, the Judeo-Christian churches falsely teach that this will be an invasion of the present-day Jewish state in Palestine, right? But this is about Gog and Magog conspiring against true Israel. I'm going to start with verse 8, where we're in chapter 38 of Ezekiel. After many days you shall be visited. In the latter years you shall come into the land that was brought back from the sword and is gathered out of many people against the mountains of Israel. We're talking about America again. We're talking about the regathered 12 tribes.
Well, let me say that Jerusalem, what was taken by the sword in 70 AD.
Yes.
And it was never to be brought back from the sword.
Right.
Jeremiah says that this city will be broken forever,
mm-hmm.
like the clay vessel that he smashed.
Yeah, and there's been perpetual war, and it's still being held by an alien people even today. Because the Jews are Edomites. They're not Israelites, okay? And then against the mountains of Israel, which have always been waste, of course, the Israelites turned the wasteland into a paradise, the European wasteland into a paradise, and then the American wasteland into a paradise.
Well, this land was brought forth, was created. It was brought forth out of the nations.
Yes, Right, out of all
stuff. And it, in conjunction to this, let me, I was going to read it later, but but let me read it now. One of the verses that, I believe is an America prophecy is Jeremiah 3:14, and it coincides with this very well. And Yahweh says to the children in Judah, "Turn, O backsliding children," says Yahweh, "for I am married to you, and I will take you, one of a city and two of a family, and I will bring you to Zion." And I don't know where in history except that the building of this nation that ever happened.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, you know, in after the Assyrian deportations, entire tribes moved in concert into new lands and into Europe.
Right.
Not one of a city and two of a family.
Right. Okay, so people need to understand that the house of Israel, the 10 northern tribes, the house of Israel, was taken first in 745 B.C., and then around 701 B.C., great numbers of the tribes of Benjamin and Judah were added to them under Sennacherib, okay? And it's primarily, as you mentioned earlier, Pharaoh's Judah, which is primarily the German people, they stayed in Persia longer than the 10 northern tribes. They didn't migrate west until maybe a couple hundred years later. Is that your understanding too?
Well, right. The first tribes that crossed into Europe were the Cimmerians. They were the same Saka, Israelites, Scythians, as the later Scythians.
Right.
However, they were called Cimmerians from the Greeks because when the Greeks met them, Akkadian was the lingua franca.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And when Akkadian was the lingua franca, the Assyrians were ruling Mesopotamia, and the Greeks learned their name from the Assyrians. The Assyrians called them the Cymri, so the Greeks called them the Cimmeroi.
Right.
And they're the people we know as Cimmerians.
Okay.
Now, those people passed into Europe very soon after their deportation. And they spoke a language very close to the Proto-Celtic language, which is really Hebrew-Phoenician.
It's Hebrew. Exactly.
Okay. Now, because they spoke a language the Cimmerians went when they moved west and they went all the way to the banks of the shores of the Baltic and into Gaul.
Mm-hmm.
And anthropologists are confused about this today.
Yes.
All the anthropologists are confused about it. And they say there are two kinds of Celts, proto-Celts and later Celts, and they say that they spoke two languages, P-Celtic and Q-Celtic.
Yeah, okay. And they're both
Why.
That's right.
That's why. Because the first Celts are the Hebrew Phoenicians, and the second Celts are the Hebrew Cimmerians.
Cimmerians. Now, let me just specify for people the word Cumru, as you say, Akkadian. It's the Assyrian word for Omri, Gomri, with a G. So it's actually talking about the Israelite king Omri. That's how the Cimmerians got their name.
Well, right, and they would have put a very guttural H on
right.
the front of that. And
right.
that would have become Cymri.
Right.
And the Greek would have heard, with his smooth language, would have heard Cimmeroi.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's pretty natural.
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, a few years ago, I did a job near Lincoln Park Zoo, okay? And that's the really ritzy area of Chicago, the Lincoln Park area. And across the street, across the alley, there was a car. It had the license plate that said Cymru, K-H-U-M-R-U, okay? And so the guy came out, and I asked him, "Is that your car?" And he said, "Yeah." And I said, "You're Welsh, aren't you?" He said, "Yeah. How do you know that?" I said, "By your license plate." Okay. So definitely the connection between the Cymru and the Cimmerians and Omri and the Welsh, he knew it. He knew he was a Cymru. Otherwise, it wouldn't have been on his license plate. Okay? All right, let's continue here. Verse 10 in Ezekiel 38. "Thus says Yahweh Elohim, it shall come to pass that at the same time shall things come into your mind, and you shall think an evil thought. He's talking about Gog and Magog, which we know today, because we did a show about this last week, that Gog and Magog are actually the synagogue of Satan and, of course, the Khazar Jews. Okay? That's who Gog and Magog are. Verse 11, and you shall say, I will go up to the land of unwalled villages. Can that be Palestine?
Well, no, it's never been Palestine.
Mm-hmm. Can't be Palestine.
And Palestine, yeah, you know, the Jews might like to claim to be, but they're not a people gathered out of their nations.
No, they're not. They're gathered out of the ghettos. Right. Because they never had a nation of their own.
Well, right, but that word nation doesn't, again, the word is goy.
Yes.
It doesn't mean a geographical
right.
area.
Right, it means a country peopled by a certain government of people, yes.
Well, it means a people, a nation to me, the word, it comes from the Latin natus, it means birth. And it means a people of a common origin. And a common history and
yes.
a common language.
Right.
With
the people.
The same ruler or leader set over them.
Right, right. And, of course, the Jews have never been a nation with a polity of their own. They have always lived in other people's nations.
Well, right. They haven't been a nation since ancient Edomia.
Right.
When they were forced to be a nation.
Right.
And even then they were a mixed-race nation.
Right.
That they had mixed with the other Canaanites. They had mixed with the Ishmaelites.
Yes.
They had mixed with the, you know, the Nabataean Arabs they're known
yes.
as today, but they're the Ishmaelites.
Right. Now, continuing with verse 11, and you shall say, I will go up to a land of unwalled villages, which cannot possibly be Palestine. It has to be America. America is the only nation on the face of the earth where we've never had walled cities. Never.
The only cities that I know that have walls are in Quebec,
right,
that I've
Canada.
Ever seen personally. Yes, in Canada.
Right. That's in Canada. And the closest we've come to walled villages is picket fences, the forts, you know, forts out west, okay? So, folks, this is talking about America here. It's not talking about Palestine. Again, Gog is saying to himself now, I will go to them that are at rest. Has the Jewish state ever been at rest? That dwell safely. Have the Jews ever dwelt safely in Palestine? Notice, constant war. All of them dwelling without walls, again, not true of Palestine, and having neither bars nor gates.
Now that's not true either of the European cities.
That's right. That's right. So we have to rule out Europe. We have to rule out virtually every country on the face of the earth.
The European cities had bars, gates, and walls all
yeah,
through the Middle Ages.
That's right. Only America, with the vast wilderness, ever since America was founded, we had not one walled city. Not one. Okay?
And well, we have a couple of gated communities.
Yeah, lately.
But mostly inhabited by Jews.
That's right. That's right, to get away from the Goyim. Verse 12, the Goyim, I'm sorry, Gog and Magog, are wanting to take a spoil and to take a prey and to turn your hand upon the desolate places that are now inhabited. We're talking about America, the wilderness of America now inhabited. Palestine has been consistently inhabited since when? 4,000 B.C.? Earlier?
Well, the oldest city in the West that continually inhabited, I would put my money on Damascus.
Okay. Well, it's right there. Just
yeah, you know,
north,
I mean,
west
Damascus,
of Palestine.
Abraham was in Damascus in 2000
right.
B.C.
Yeah. So, but Palestine has been inhabited almost that long. So
yeah,
it's
it
not in the wilderness
been,
since this prophecy was written.
It has not been uninhabited in our history.
Yes. Yes. So it can't
it
be Palestine.
History.
Again, it can't be Palestine. And upon the people that are gathered out of the nations. Talking about true Israel again, folks. Which have gotten cattle and goods and dwell in the midst of the land. Okay? We're the cattle farmers, right? Not the Jews. The Jews just slaughter the cattle. They don't raise them. Verse 13, Sheba and Dedan and the merchants of Tarshish with all the young lions there shall say to you, are you come to take a spoil? Have you gathered your company to take a prey? To carry away silver and gold? Who's taking our silver and gold, folks?
Right. Now, Sheba and Dadan and the merchants of Tarshish, that this is an end-time prophecy, but
yes.
Again, these entities were trading entities at the time the verses were uttered, and they're being used allegorically.
Right, right, right. Okay.
To represent commerce.
Yeah.
I mean, Sheba and Dadan were Arab cities on the camel routes.
Yeah, yeah.
That they were prominent cities on the trade routes.
Right, right.
And the merchants of Tarshish were the merchants, the Phoenician merchants, sea merchants.
Yes, yes. Okay. Well, let's continue here. Let's go to 14 through 16 here. Therefore, son of man, prophesy and say to Gog, thus says Yahweh Elohim, in that day when my people of Israel dwell safely. Okay, the American nation has been the safest dwelling of all countries on the face of the earth for the last 200 years. No doubt about that, even though we had a civil war. But until 9/11.
Well, that's the land brought back from the sword. We haven't really had a war in our territory since the
Civil War. That's right. That's right.
Where even though Switzerland is a pretty safe place, and yet, Finland maybe today is a pretty safe. There were major wars fought.
Yes.
All through Europe and throughout the Napoleonic Wars, World War I, World War II.
Right. Right. Yes. Okay. And then continuing here. Verse 15, and you shall come from your place out of the north parts, you and many people with you, all of them riding upon horses, a great company and a mighty army. And, of course, this could be China coming across from the North Pole. Verse 16, and you shall come against my people of Israel, and it's not the Jews, as a cloud to cover the land. They've already invaded, with the black cloud from Africa, with the brown cloud from Mexico, with the red cloud the communist Jews from Russia, okay? It shall be in the latter days, and I will bring you against my land, that the heathen may know me when I shall be sanctified in you, O Gog, before their eyes. In other words, he is going to destroy Gog in our presence. Right? Is there any other way to interpret this, Bill?
Well, that's what we're told, and that's what we're told without this amount of detail. In many other places in Scripture to talk about the day of vengeance, the day of Jezreel, that Yahweh is going to destroy our enemies in our presence.
Yes, yes. Okay, I see we only have about 7 or 8 minutes left, so I'd like to turn to Revelation chapter 21, verses 10 through 12, because, folks, in fact, I have a reference here, as a cross-reference to Ezekiel 48, but we didn't go into Ezekiel 48 today. But the Bible clearly states that the kingdom of Yahweh will consist of the 12 tribes of Israel. There's no universalization of this kingdom, of the government of this kingdom. Chapter 21, verses 10 and through 12. And he carried me away in the spirit to a great and high mountain and showed me that great city, the holy Jerusalem, can't be the current Jerusalem, right? You cited the prophecy that old city of Jerusalem has been under a curse.
Well, right, and that's the broken bottle prophecy of Jeremiah. Clifton wrote a good paper on it.
Uh-huh, okay, and it says that this holy Jerusalem will be descending out of heaven. So it can't be that place in Palestine. Verse 11, having the glory of God, and her light was like to a stone, the stone kingdom, most precious, even like a jasper stone, clear as crystal. Verse 12, underline verse 12, folks. And had a great wall and high, and had 12 gates, and at the gates 12 angels, and the names written thereon, which are the names of the 12 tribes of the children of Israel. Not the churches. It's not the Roman Catholic Church. It's not the Jews. It's not the Protestant churches. It's the 12 tribes of Israel. Is there any other way to interpret this, Bill?
No, absolutely not.
Okay. So what's all this business that the Catholic Church and now the Lutheran churches, et cetera, say, well, true Israel, Israel in the flesh, has been replaced by so-called spiritual Israel, or by the church,
Well, what they do is they take crafty advantage of a couple of lines by Paul.
Mm-hmm.
And one example is where Paul talks about the Israel of God. When Paul talks about the Israel of God, he's talking about the Israelites of the dispersion
mm-hmm.
in contradistinction to the pretenders, the Edomites
yes.
in Judea.
Right.
That's why Paul uses the phrase the Israel of God, the real Israel, and not the clowns like Troublemaker calling themselves Israel.
Right. Yes. So when Scripture is properly read without all of this universalism and antinomianism written into it by the various churches, including the Catholic Church, when we understand, and even the King James Version, when King James told the translators, I insist that you translate the word, what's the, I forget the word, the Greek word for congregation, ecclesia, right. When you translate the word ecclesia, I want you to translate it church, not congregation.
Well, right, and that and many other false translations.
Yeah.
Well, like they'll take the word diaconus.
Okay.
And in some places they'll translate it servant, which is its most literal meaning.
Yes.
In some places they'll translate it minister, and in some places they won't translate it. They'll write deacon.
Okay.
And all little things like that, it lends credence to their false church
right.
structure.
Right. Yes. And that's what we've been calling church Greek in our series on Paul, where they redefine words to suit the church mentality and the church
well, right, and we'll see a good amount of church Greek tomorrow in one
yeah in First and Second Timothy, right?
Right.
So those will be our last two on Paul, where we have definitely shown that Paul is not a universalist. He's not an antinomian. He's none of the things that the so-called churches claim that he is, because they because of all these false translations they've put into the Bible. There's not one universalistic word in the entire Bible. There's not one antinomian word in the entire Bible, okay? That's all church Greek, okay? That they have falsely translated. And another good word is Gentile, which does not appear in either the Greek or the Hebrew, which they falsely define as being non-Israelite, when there is no such word in either Greek or Hebrew. And the fact that the Latin gentilis means kinsman, so it doesn't mean non-Israelite at all. But that's how the churches use the word.
Well, right. They perverted our language. The Jews
yes.
are the ultimate perverters of language. I would like to, before we get away from this
yes.
Topic,
sure.
I'd like to cite two more verses.
Okay.
And one is Isaiah 49:19-21. And Isaiah is talking about the dispersed, the captives, the Assyrian captives, right?
Okay.
The Israelites taken captive by the Assyrians.
Right.
And he says, "For thy waste and thy desolate places and the land of thy destruction," which was Palestine,
mm-hmm.
"shall even now be too narrow by reason of the inhabitants." In
right.
other words, will multiply greatly.
It's
"And they that swallow thee up," meaning the Assyrians and the Babylonians, "shall be far away.
Mm-hmm.
The children which thou shalt have after thou hast lost the other," in other words, all the ones that were killed in the moving,
right.
"shall say again in thine ears, this place is too straight for me.
Yes.
Give place to me that I may dwell." And let me say that our race is the only race on this planet in our recorded history mm-hmm. that has ever moved into uninhabited lands and built them.
Right.
All the other races are still where they were 50,000 years ago.
Right.
Or they've pushed their way into inhabited lands.
Right.
That now some people might say, America was inhabited by Indians. Well, Northern Europe really wasn't inhabited when our race moved into it. And Herodotus and several other Greek writers attest to that.
Yep.
And America wasn't really inhabited with settlements.
Mm-hmm.
There's a difference. There were some wandering savage tribes, but they never really had permanent settlements.
Right, right.
For the most part. And most of America was not inhabited.
That's right. That's right.
Most of the land here was not inhabited. It was barren, and we turned it into a garden.
That's right. That's right. That's absolutely right. So only the Caucasian people, folks, have turned these wildernesses of the planet into civilization, into a paradise. places until the Jews move in. Okay? And as soon as the Jews move in, they turn paradise into a cesspool, which is exactly what they've done to Palestine.
Well, they turn everything into a cesspool.
Yeah.
I mean, as soon as you see the Jews inhabit a community in America, you'll see the Negroes are right behind.
Yeah, right. That's right. That's right. The Negroes, you know, have the ghettos around the Jewish ghetto, okay? And so the Jews always move in with their vice rackets and destroy our civilization. This was prophesied in Genesis 3:15 and 16.
I believe another, you know, now that you mention that, I just have to go here.
Mm-hmm.
Another verse that points to America is Daniel 11:45.
Okay.
And we discussed Daniel 11 at length in our Daniel series, and I believe that Daniel 11 is basically a snapshot of history.
Yeah.
And Daniel 11:45, the subject is the king of the south. And I believe that the king of the north and the king of the south are basically the satanic forces that have struggled over our civilization.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And the king of the south, And this says, and he shall plant the tabernacles of his palace between the seas in the glorious holy mountain. Yet he shall come to his end, and none shall help him. I believe that that is when the Sephardic and the Sicilian Jews came into America and usurped it.
Mm, okay. Very interesting.
That's the king of the south, and that's what
mm-hmm.
Daniel lived. I could be wrong, but I notice it's definitely pointing to a glorious holy mountain is Yahweh's people.
Yeah,
and between the seas, and that has to that can only describe America.
Between the Pacific and the Atlantic, yes, exactly. It can't be Palestine.
No, absolutely
it can't
not.
Possibly.
The Dead Sea just doesn't count. I'm sorry.
Yes. Okay. Very good. All right. So I think we've pretty well established, ladies and gentlemen, that America is the regathering of the 12 tribes. We could actually go with many other verses here, but I think Ezekiel 37 just nails it down hard, nails it down really hard. And so does Leviticus 26, seven times prophecy. And then, you know, the more we think in terms of finding scriptures which actually reference America, then the more verses we find. Because the fact is, it's only in recent history, and since, like, let's say 1950, you know, when Howard B. Rand was writing in the 60s, when Comparé and Swift were writing, that this subject was even being given any attention. Okay? So there's way more here than, not that we've just scratched the surface, but there's a lot of other verses that pertain to true Israel in America. And, you know, maybe, and we will continue some of the other verses that refer to this on our 10-10-10 marathon, okay? So we're looking forward to that very, very much, okay? And then tomorrow on Yahweh's Covenant People, we'll be doing our first installment of 1 and 2 Timothy, correct?
Yes, I'm looking forward to that.
Yes, very good. All right, so thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening. We are, in America, the regathered 12 tribes of Israel, folks. Let that sink in. Praise Yahweh. Good night, everybody.